Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining me for this month's Head to Head. I'm really pleased to be welcoming two guests, Amy and Kirsty from Priory Witham Academies up in Lincoln. Welcome along, ladies. How are you both?
Hi, Sarah. We're fine, thank you.
Good, 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 good. So today we're going to be talking about your very exciting Key Stage 1 development journey, exploring continuous provision, but actually more than that, the kind of the long-term picture of that, because I know you're taking it through year one, through year two, and are exploring it into year three as well, which is exciting to hear. But it's been a long journey and lots of hard work. And I think when I'm engaging with schools during the work that we do here at Early Excellence, there's lots of conversations around continuous provision in early years. And then as we talk about it in Key Stage 1 and beyond, people have lots and lots of questions about it and wonder, and it's quite a big step to take. So it's going to be so interesting to hear about your journey and the kind of the things that you discussed and the challenges that you've perhaps overcome, and most importantly, how it's working for the children. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I think it'll be great for our listeners. So thank you for your time today. So I think before we dig into that, it'd probably be good if actually I could come to you, Amy, first as head teacher, just for you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the school, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, of course. No problem, Sarah. So I'm Amy Tallentire. I'm the primary head teacher at the Witham Academy because we're actually an all through school. So we take children from the age of 2 to 19. So we're a big school, and I look after the primary side of it. We've been an all through academy since 2008. So we're quite established now as an all through school. But that being said, as you know, our sort of school improvement journey is never over, and we're always, you know, looking to see what it is that we can do next to develop our practice. And as you said, you know, the development of continuous provision has sort of been something that sat really importantly within that, particularly, you know, well, as you've said, it's a long project and a long piece of work that we've been developing. We are in Lincoln, as you said, so we're in the city of Lincoln, and our profile as a school is, you know, sort of to give you a bit of context, you know, we're about 62% pupil premium and 34% SEN, you know, so we're well above average in terms of that. So, you know, it is quite a challenging context to work in. And I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why as a school and, you know, as a leadership team, we're always looking to see, you know, what is it that we can do to maximise the life chances of all of the children that come here.
Yeah, great. Super, super. And over to you, Kirsty, to introduce yourself and give a little bit of background for you, if that's OK.
Yeah, of course. So hi, I'm Kirsty Dawson and I work here at the Priory Witham Academy, currently as an associate assistant head. So my journey started here as an early years teacher, so I worked in reception for a number of years before developing my role then as an early years lead. As our journey with continuous provision then kind of continued to develop, I started to work in Key Stage 2 and, as you've mentioned more recently, into Lower Key Stage 2 as well, which is very, very exciting.
I think I wonder whether or not you'll gradually progress through the school, Kirsty, and might end up in year six.
We're trying, Sarah. We're trying.
I feel like there's a bit of a plan there.
We're trying.
Right. So that's great to hear a bit about you. And it was a pleasure to meet you both, because obviously we came and did an Early Excellence Roadshow at your setting. And as I met you and we started to talk, I kind of lured you in, didn't I, for this podcast. So yeah, really excited to hear. Now, I know, obviously, Kirsty, you've just alluded to you've been at school a long time and you started in early years as a teacher. And I think it's right to say that you've been running continuous provision in early years for a good few years now. It's quite established, isn't it, and embedded. About how long? I can't remember now. So how long you've been doing provision in early years?
Been doing provision for a good kind of 10, 11 years now in early years.
Really established. So obviously you've then made that kind of decision together. And I'm sure there were lots of conversations about taking it into key stage one. And as I said, that's kind of something that we have lots of conversations around. So what was your thinking behind why you wanted to take it into key stage one as that initial step? Because I think when you probably did that, you maybe weren't thinking, oh, we'll take it to year two and year three and perhaps beyond. But actually, what was the rationale for that initial, let's explore this for year one?
I think it was part of the reason was that it was that post-COVID era. So we had children that were moving into Key Stage 1 to access a curriculum where we felt that they hadn't actually had their early years entitlement yet. So, you know, through discussions with our deputy head teacher, Claire Logan, who leads our early years setting, you know, we had to think really carefully about what's going to be the right thing for these children as they move into year one, particularly off the back of the pandemic, where we know that, you know, our disadvantaged children were disproportionately impacted by that. So we had to think very carefully, what are these children coming back to? And how are we going to make sure that as a school, we give them what they need? And I think that was one of the big sort of catalysts, if you like, as to why we moved it into year one.
I think that almost gave us the autonomy in which to do something. We had to be bold, we had to be brave. So obviously we started on that journey. And I think now, actually, even looking back, if you think about it, not just in our school, but even nationally, there are lots of children who do not achieve those early learning goals by the end of, you know, their foundation experience. So actually, what we're doing is we're expecting them to move to year one without having, you know, achieved what they need to achieve, those really solid, firm foundations. And what we're then expecting them to do is to learn a new curriculum in a totally different way. And actually, you know, it soon became very apparent that it wasn't just appropriate for us during those, for those children that had missed those COVID years, but actually it was appropriate for all children, because actually developmentally, there's not a huge difference between a child that leaves reception and a child that joins year one. You know, developmentally, there's very, very little difference between the 2 years. So I think it's been a real eye-opener for us, yeah, really, in terms of, yeah, what we're able to achieve, kind of building on those skills and knowledge that the children have kind of got in early years. So, yeah.
And I think that's really powerful, isn't it? Thinking about it from child development and the child's point of view, and not just where they are developmentally and what they've achieved, but in terms of what we know about early childhood research, in terms of children needing practical, concrete experiences, repeated opportunities for learning. We know from brain development that actually up until the age of around 7, children are not ready to take things into the abstract. So actually, yeah, and I think what you're talking about is you're describing some of that and you've seen some of that. So yeah, absolutely a good rationale behind it. But were there any reservations for you as a leadership team in particular, or maybe the year one team that we're going to be taking it on? Were there reservations about making such a big shift in pedagogy?
I think that probably comes down to almost the planning that then sits behind it, because we made the decision that was where we wanted to take it. So I think the reservations sit there in terms of, right, how are we going to make this work and how are we going to ensure that this is successful, and then almost plan to mitigate the risk and to make sure that we're almost giving ourselves those assurances that, no, we are giving this the best possible opportunity to work. So things like looking at the leadership structure, for example. So we moved, much to her delight, we moved Kirsty from early years into Key Stage 1, you know, because Kirsty, you know, is one of our really skilled and really secure practitioners with, you know, using continuous provision. And she had that level of experience. So by moving Kirsty into Key Stage 1 to lead that change, we almost had given it the best chance to succeed, if you like. And then I think Kirsty would almost say it seems like making sure we've got the resourcing right and all of those bits then, isn't it? But you've got to make sure they're all in place so it's successful.
And what it also did was it gave kind of teachers that autonomy in their classrooms to now deliver the curriculum in a very, very different way. And I think one of the things that we kind of kept coming back to was the fact that actually how we teach our children has as much of an impact on outcomes as what we teach does as well. So actually it was kind of coming away from that. Actually, yes, we do need to teach certain things in the curriculum, but there's nothing that tells us how to deliver that curriculum. So it really gave those teachers that autonomy. We know our children better than anybody. We know how best they learn. And actually, we know what these children need. And I think giving kind of teachers the confidence to deliver their curriculum in a way that was more meaningful and really, really built on the learning experiences that they'd had previously, really, really supported them to kind of get the best out of their children. I mean, you know, we've seen a profound impact really on outcomes. And actually what we've seen is that we've now been able to kind of plan more from the needs and the capabilities of our children rather than a curriculum plan that suggests that all children have to receive the same diet at the same time in a whole class just because they're in the same year group or the same class, which actually we found not to be the most effective model of delivering our curriculum. So yeah, it's been really, really positive to kind of shift that focus again onto pedagogy and not just what we want the children to learn.
Yeah, and I think that's ongoing.
Yeah, that's a really strong, clear message. And kind of reflecting on, is this the best way to present learning for these children? Just because actually there's maybe a traditional way or a way that we've always done it, it's taking that step back and thinking, is this the best way to present this learning to our children? Are we making it as easy as possible for these children to learn? Because actually their brains are still making connections. They still need lots of support to make those connections. Things need to make sense to them, don't they? And actually that reflection of, is this the best way to present it? Are we making it easy for them to learn, or as easy as possible? That's really what you were leading to there, Kirsten. I think that's a really clear message and actually something to be reflecting on as practitioners and almost as leaders as well, in thinking about actually raising outcomes and considering how we're approaching things. So yeah, great. Sorry, I interrupted you, Amy. There was something else you were going to say.
I was going to say, you know, in terms of asking about, you know, initial reservations and challenges, like you say, I think that's a really important point that Kirsty's made, because, you know, people see change in school, don't they? And that can cause a little bit of anxiety or what's happening now in Key Stage One, it's different. So supporting all of the staff team to understand that actually we're not changing the curriculum necessarily, we're just changing the way in which we deliver that curriculum to the children. And I think that has been something that we've had to almost give quite a bit of reassurance around, you know, to the staff.
Yeah, really interesting. So you've touched on really kind of some of the challenges around resourcing and environment and those sorts of things. But what were the first steps that you took then, in terms of, you've made the decision, Kirsty's moved into year one, and actually Kirsty probably teaching the year one curriculum is quite new to you, I would imagine, having had lots of experience in EYFS. But what were the first things that you kind of looked at? Was it the environment? Was it the curriculum? Was it staff reassurances and kind of going back to that pedagogy and research? What were the first few steps that you took?
Yeah, so initially we really looked at the research and the pedagogy. We actually did some training through Early Excellence and the Key Stage One training very early on as a team. And we had some new teachers starting with us. So it was almost a really good opportunity for all of us to start together from afresh and to really build our skills and knowledge as a team. It was very new. It was very exciting. And actually what we've managed to do was kind of create a team of teachers and teacher assistants who were really, really wanting to go on this journey. And what we needed to do is almost give them the skills, the knowledge, but also the time to develop those environments. As you said, I think for us, the biggest challenge was the resourcing. But we're very, very fortunate in terms of, we have a very, very strong early years team. Lots of the staff had worked in early years previously, and actually we had a really secure kind of progression of skill already developed in early years. So what we were able to do is really, really start to build on that and move that into year one. So for example, when we first set up our year one classrooms, they were set up pretty much identically how the children had left the classrooms in reception, and our reception staff kind of supported us with that development. So that was a really, really key kind of strand for us to really pull out actually what experiences, what resources had those children had in early years, what resources did we then need in year one, so that almost when the children came to us, that transition was really smooth. It was a process. They felt really familiar and secure in those environments, because although they were essentially in a different room, actually the experiences and resources that we were offering them were still the same. So already children were kind of coming back to us and they were really safe, really secure. They were exploring that environment as confidently as they had been at the end of reception. So again, that was almost
it's that you're enabling the children to assimilate what they know, because you're offering them security and familiarity, and as you say, they're just in a different room at that point. And that continuity is quite important, even through early years and then obviously into Key Stage One, offering that continuity. But of course there is always that element then of progression as well, isn't there? And I think obviously you've You've just kind of talked about that as a key thread, and what you alluded to is the pattern of your curriculum and looking at that sequence of skills and that sequence of knowledge that you will have clearly within your curriculum, and seeing how that those things thread from EYFS into Key Stage 1, and how the provision can enable the children to apply that new knowledge or explore that new knowledge with the teaching alongside to kind of practice and apply those skills. So I would imagine the progression part of it then kind of came next, I would imagine, in terms of the resourcing and engaging with staff and really looking at that. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because what you also want to do is, although you want the children to feel safe and secure, you are also aware that, you know, you do need to move that learning on, and that actually your environment can't stay static. One of the huge kind of benefits that we've seen from having continuous provision is that when children are motivated to learn, that has a huge, huge impact on outcomes. And actually, if they're ready to learn something new and they almost learn it in a way that suits their preferred learning style, that actually that learning is going to be more successful. So actually, we absolutely wanted to build on all of those experiences that they previously had, but we also had a real awareness that actually we were now in a position where we could really kind of drive our curriculum through the continuous enhanced provision, and as well as some adult directed tasks. We always look at the triangle, you know, the early excellence triangle, which we use in early years, and then we started to obviously look at the Key Stage 1 triangle, and we really tried to find that balance between obviously allowing children the time to explore their environment, but also there are some things that you do need to teach discreetly, such as your phonics, such as your writing. So I think timetabling was also something that we really, really needed to look at. But certainly going back to the progression of skills, actually what had the children already had? So it was really important to us, for example, that the children still had access to powder paint, but actually how were we going to move that on? You know, they knew how to mix it now, they knew how to mix colours, they knew how to get the consistency right. So what next actually is it that we add the black and the white? Which one do we add first? Why do we add it first? So it's almost always coming back to what skills do they need to develop, and almost why this and why now? And that's kind of now continuing through into year one, two and three based on the skills that they've already acquired in our setting.
Yeah, and actually it would sound, I think, because obviously curriculum development and kind of progression is always something that schools are either just starting, developing, reviewing, refining, sometimes still overhauling. There's all of that kind of curriculum work is continual, really, isn't it? But it sounds like as you've gone through this process, it's enabled you to probably even hone even more your curriculum that you're offering to the children, and that sequence, so that it is cumulative. What you're talking about is that cumulative building of knowledge and skills in terms of those experiences and the examples that you've given, which is great. And it's interesting that you've touched on timetable and actually the things that do need to be taught discreetly, because again, when we're in schools having conversations about continuous provision into Key Stage 1, there is that worry of how much curriculum content there is to get through and actually how that gets done. And absolutely, some things do need to be taught discreetly, and that comes back to what's the best way to present this learning and having that reflection. But it's about that balanced approach, and sometimes as children move through their educational journey in schools, it becomes a more of a top heavy, much more kind of formal and structured, and much less of that opportunity to explore, practice, apply and develop those wider skills, their characteristics, their learning to learn and those things, because they don't just stop within early years as well. So tell us a bit more then about what does a typical day in year one look like? I mean, that's a question we get asked lots. So I'm going to throw it to you because you are in there doing it, kind of walking the walk. So just a brief overview of a typical day in year one then. How does that look for your children?
Okay, so a typical day in year one, the children will come in the morning, and the first lesson that we start with is phonics, and that's kind of across the whole of the school. So as you walk down the corridors, you kind of hear the chanting all the way down the corridor, which is really lovely. And again, we've kept that very, very similar in reception, year one, year two, and now the spelling also in year three, just to make sure that children have that same routine when they come into school in the morning. Again, just to support with transitions, to feel safe and secure, and to kind of be ready for their day. They know what they're going to come into first thing, and off they go. We then go into, in year one, we'll then go into continuous provision. So obviously that's where children have the opportunity to kind of revisit the concepts and skills time and time again, because what we don't want is we don't want to just move on, teach something discreetly and move on. We want them to be able to kind of come back to something and learn it in lots and lots of different new ways. So there'll be provision time. And during that time, there might be some more adult directed learning. But what we do try to do is do that at the very start of the session, so that actually still children still get a prolonged period of time and kind of following their own interests, using resources in a very open-ended way, so that actually we can really assess and observe the skills and knowledge that those children have been developing. After kind of continuous provision time, we then stop and have, so it'll either be English or maths just before lunch. And then when they return from lunch, we swap it around. So again, it's English or maths. And then again, for the afternoon, they've got a prolonged period of time in continuous provision before going home at the end of the day.
Yeah, really interesting. So obviously you've shared there around some kind of discrete sessions and some guided sessions. So that, and you talked a little about phonics, English and maths, realistically, they're the three things that you mentioned. So what about the rest of the national curriculum? How are you delivering that? Because I know you are, and you know you are, but that's one of the worries for people when they're moving into this kind of new journey. What about the rest of the curriculum? So what's happening with that?
So it very much depends on kind of what skill it is that we're teaching children. Obviously, again, with DT, there are certain skills that, you know, children aren't just going to go into the workshop and know how to make a join. That's not something that they're going to know. But what we would do is we would either show children how to do that in a small guided group session. We talk to them about the purpose of why, for example, they might make that join, why it's appropriate, for example, to make that join using cardboard and not paper. And then what we would do is we'd have, we use a lot of visuals. So we would have that visual routine almost out on the table so that children would then be encouraged when they return to that area to use that join to make something of their own choosing. We then have our adults, you know, there to support the children if necessary. You know, so actually if they want to make that join but they can't follow the visual or they can't remember how the adult would show them how to do it, you know, through those interactions we can really, you know, sit down with them, learn, play with them and actually show them what to do, but in a very bespoke, almost individual manner, because not all children, as I've said, need the same thing. So it's about giving the children the opportunity to practice those skills, but knowing which children need those extra scaffolds and supports. Likewise, there might be something that you might set up like a provocation or an invitation, and that might be enough to kind of get children talking. And again, that's where the skill of your adults comes in to kind of really explore that child's thinking and really to extend and challenge their thinking process as well. So one of the things that I'm thinking about now as well is kind of like tidy up time is really, really useful. So for example, our children, when they tidy, they'll tidy all of the animals away into kind of like classes of animals. So again, every opportunity throughout the day is planned as a learning experience. So actually at tidy up time, we're not just going to put the timer on, you're going to tidy. Actually, what you're going to do is you're going to sort these animals into reptiles, into birds, into fish. So actually they're constantly returning and reviewing that learning all of the time, to really, really think about what they're doing at each point of the day.
And that's a really good reflection to kind of sit back and actually think, where is our curriculum being delivered? Some of it will be through that carpet gathering group time. Some of it will be through routines of the day that you've just said. Some of it will be, as you say, within the provision. But it's really about looking about where that curriculum is happening and how that can kind of evolve over time. So that's really interesting. I just want to loop back to something that you said about, we've taught them how to, in the example you were talking about, make this connection, make this fold. But then they go and do that, make win the creation that they want to create in a way that they want to use it, rather than it being everybody goes and does the same end product. For example, what you're talking about is you've given the skill or given the knowledge, but it's up to them to explore and consider how they want to apply that in a inquiry that they would like to explore, in a way that they would like to explore. And again, that goes back to giving children autonomy in their learning and motivation and choices. You're giving them the structure of we'd like you to explore this, we've taught this skill, but actually then they can choose which way they'd like to use that and apply, which is really interesting and very powerful for young children, I think.
Absolutely. I think it's about children not having to kind of listen to an adult's ideal. So it's, you know, I'm not saying that there are never times when we obviously sit and we talk to children, or we sit and we teach children in that whole group situation, because again, there are certain things that you will have to sit and teach, whether that's through a high quality text or, you know, your map work, etc., looking at the local environment. There are always things that you're going to do, but you don't have to do it in the same way. It might be through visitors, it might be through rich first-hand experiences. There are lots and lots of different ways to deliver your curriculum. I think it's about finding that balance and what's right for your children. There's not one way of teaching all children. And I think that while we kind of stand at the front and talk at or to children all the time, what we're doing is we're taking away their motivation to want to learn. And we're almost capping their learning in some ways, because what we're not doing is allowing them that time and space to really explore their own ideas and to kind of really extend their own thinking.
Yeah, and that's crucial, that sort of developing thinkers, because thinkers are learners, aren't they? So developing that thinking, actually, we're not doing the thinking for them. They're having to do the thinking themselves. And they can think outside the box, and they can make mistakes, and they can find out new things. And there's this kind of incidental learning that's happening on along the way, I suppose, isn't there? And I think that that's also kind of just a good thread to kind of reflect on and consider. And also what you're describing are purposeful and meaningful opportunities that actually is going to mean more to the children. Things are more likely to stick in the children's mind if it's purposeful and if it's meaningful. And the examples that you're giving where they are able to follow their own lines of inquiry, it's going to be meaningful for them, isn't it? That's going to stick because it's something they've really wanted to do. So it is about thinking about those rich learning experiences and making sure that they are purposeful and meaningful. They're kind of key phrases that we talk about a lot in terms of when you're presenting learning. So yes, is it making sense for children? Is this the best way to present it? But is it purposeful? Is it meaningful? Rather than being kind of maybe a little bit dry or maybe a little bit stilted, which sometimes happens, or sometimes the other is that it's almost too lovely to learn and a bit too fun, and kind of some of the learning gets lost because of the funness of things. It's about that sharpness of curriculum, intent, where you are in your skills progression and that development, but actually making sure that it's purposeful and all really connected.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we've talked around year one, because that's what, so you've been developing and kind of been on the journey for continuous provision in year one for about 4 years now, haven't you? But I do know that you've also taken it into year two. So it'd be good to talk a little bit about that. So how long has it been happening in year two, and similar sort of things, really? Did you have to go through a similar process or a different process? How did it feel taking it the next step into the next year group?
We absolutely took continuous provision into year two. We'd seen the impact that it had on outcomes. There was a lot of positivity actually from our key stage one staff.
Yes.
And there's like a really, yeah, a really lovely vibe actually. Yeah. It was really incredible. And you know, staff were excited to continue on the journey. I think taking it into year two, there probably was a little bit more apprehension, particularly kind of with those lovely statutory end of year two assessments.
Yes.
And, you know, it was kind of coming back to actually, what do these children need? What are they going to be more successful? How are they going to be more motivated to want to learn? And again, really, really considering that even still at the age of kind of seven, some of those children's kind of thinking and understanding skills are going to be far more advanced than their writing skills, for example. So if we're then expecting to deliver a curriculum and then, for example, for every child to do a worksheet, what we're not going to get is a really true reflection of what that child knows. We're not going to know what they understand, because we're going to underestimate the ability of those children purely by giving them kind of a really static kind of end of unit or end of lesson outcome, if you like. So I think it was about children again being able to have the opportunity to kind of revisit their skills and to kind of really really develop them, but come back time and time and time again in an environment in which they felt safe and secure, so that actually if they did make a mistake or they didn't get something quite right, it didn't matter, because they knew they would have time again to go back that afternoon or the following morning to kind of revisit those skills again and kind of see if they could perfect almost that skill or develop that knowledge even further.
Absolutely. So how long you've been doing it in year two now?
So year two, this is the third year in year two.
So I was right at the start to kind of say this has been quite a long journey. So you've been doing EYFS for over 10 years, and then you've been looking at year one as the next priority for four, and then actually you've kind of rolled that through. And I suppose actually it's that cohort of children that you initially made the step with into year one actually is the cohort that kind of, I assume, is the one moving through the school and that you're kind of using that continuous provision with. So I mean, you've said several times it's had a profound impact on the children. It's had a profound impact on outcomes. But so what does that look like? What reassurances can we give to people in terms of actually what that's done for your children?
Well, it's just done so much for them. And I think as well, when we talk about outcomes, we don't necessarily mean outcomes in terms of kind of like their end of key stage outcomes, but it's like it impacts things like behaviour, motivation, well-being, all of those things that we know are crucial. Resilience is huge. So some of our children are so resilient because they try and try and try again. They pick themselves up time and time again, you know, and I think they're really, really important skills to harbour, because again, we know that children who are happy and motivated to learn are going to have, you know, are going to have better outcomes. I think there's just been such an impact. Mm.
They really enjoy their learning, and you know, they want to be at school and they really enjoy being at school. I think one of the other things to sort of to understand is that the expectations are really
so high.
So, you know, they are learning in a different way, but actually the expectation, the clarity that the staff have around where they need to get these children to, you know, to meet the expectation by the end of the year is really, really clear.
Absolutely.
You know, and the staff team are really motivated to make sure that the children get there. So the expectations within the year group have probably got even higher, I would say.
Yeah, our expectations are huge for these children.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't matter, you know, where you're learning or what you're doing. These are our expectations. And you know, this is where we'll get the children to.
I think it's because as well, we've seen more children who have been able to kind of show us those outcomes because it hasn't been so kind of restricted, because they have been able to kind of show us what they know, if you like, in a range of contexts, a range of different experiences with a range of different resources. Actually, what we found is some of our children, particularly some of our lowest attaining children, actually, have been extremely successful because we haven't necessarily relied on one method of recording, because we've used videos, we've used photographs, we've used floor box. Actually, what we've been able to do is really, really say that we are secure in our knowledge of that child. We know that they know X because of this, this and this. So actually what we almost end up with is a wider range of evidence to support our assessments. And it's not the same evidence for every child. And it's almost not a tokenistic gesture either. We're not collecting evidence for the sake of evidence. What we're doing is we're collecting kind of real information on these children that show us that they have those skills in a wider range of contexts.
Actually, it'd be good to unpack that a little bit further, because I know when we were chatting and talking about doing this podcast, you were talking about a child, and forgive me, I can't remember which year group. I think it might have been Key Stage 2, actually.
Year 3.
But yeah, so in terms of the children have been learning around a particular theme and aspects of your curriculum, but actually it would be, you shared about how a child had tackled that and approached their learning in a different way and that opportunity. So it would perhaps be good to unpick that and share the journey for that child and how they went about their learning in that instance, just to give people something to hook into. I think it would be helpful to visualise.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a little girl here who finds it difficult to learn in whole class situations, will disengage quite quickly, particularly if there's an element of the curriculum that she can't access. So, for example, if she's in a maths lesson, she's absolutely fine as long as she can do the learning. But then as soon as she makes a mistake, or as soon as kind of a question comes along that she's not sure of, if an adult's not there or a peer's not there to support her, she will disengage straight away. And that's it. And that almost then has a massive impact on, you know, on her learning for the rest of the day. But what we found is, because we've offered that kind of curriculum time and that time for her to be creative, she's an extremely creative little girl. Really? What we found is that actually her outcomes, the learning that she's producing in that kind of provision room, they're out of this world. Like when she bought something to me, it was when we were talking last time, so she bought me this piece of learning that she'd done on the Romans, and actually she had chosen to use a written outcome, which isn't something that she would often choose to do because she does find writing difficult. She's very competent at writing, but she's obviously just got something in her mind somewhere that's telling her she's not a good writer. And she bought this lovely piece of learning about the Romans. So she'd been in the block area, she built various kind of structures from the Roman Empire, she'd done her own research in the books. So we have a range of books in there, some that are phonetically decodable that obviously the children who still need that can access, some are very, very advanced books that, you know, have so much detail and, you know, for our highest attaining children. But what she'd done is kind of picked out the text that she could read, and she'd kind of done her own research about the Roman Empire, and then she'd kind of made like a bubble diagram, I guess. So she'd put Romans in the middle, and then obviously like the spider diagram, and she'd done like little like where did they live, what did they eat. She'd done like something about farming, and she was so proud of this learning. Then what she'd done is she'd kind of all around the edges she'd kind of made a mosaic border. She was talking to us about the art and about the creativity. She's as I said before, she's very creative, she loves art. So she then turned it over and she'd kind of done a map of her Roman Empire, if you like. And again, there were like little bits of mosaic detailing all around that kind of, so she'd done like little signs for, you know, oh, this is the Colosseum. So she'd done like a little sign with the mosaics around it that said Colosseum. And she just kind of really used everything that she'd learned but presented it in a way that made sense for her. And again, you know, you then look at the child next to her and they might have done something very, very different. So they might not have had a written record, they might have made a leaflet about the Roman Empire, or they might have kind of built like I say, you know, the Roman Empire in the blocks, and they might have written a story, or they might not even had any written outcome. So it's just really, really lovely that they can show us what they know, but in such a range, a range of ways. And like I said to you, quite often we have found that their oracy skills, their understanding and their thinking skills are far more advanced than their written skills. So actually what we've enabled those children to do is to show us what they know. And we haven't underestimated their ability, which I think is really, really important, really, which comes back to what you were saying, Amy, about the expectations. I think now our expectations are higher than ever, because there's not a reason that any of our children can't excel. The resources are so open-ended that there's no reason that they can't access what we're asking them to access. So again, I think in terms of motivation, well-being, you know, like they're so proud of their learning.
Oh, so proud. You can't walk past a room without being dragged in, literally. They're so desperate
and like, and when you
to
do,
show you what they're doing.
They give you something that they've made. So we've got like an embroidery area at the minute where they're learning different stitches for DT. And, you know, so you walk in and they give you a hat that they've made. So you're walking around the provision with a hat, and then, you know, and then what you have to do is you have to then go and they tell you about their Roman settlement. But then actually another child's kind of then made a Stone Age kind of village, because obviously we've learned about the Stone Age before. So those resources are then kept in that provision area so that they can revisit again time after time after time. And then you think you're just about to escape, and then one of them runs up to you with a stopwatch and they want to time how many star jumps you can do in 30 seconds. And then when you tell them that you've already done it already and you can see their name on the tally chart, they're like, oh, you need to see if you can beat your score. You got 27 last time, so you can get this. And they tell you how many more you need. So actually the level of learning that's going on in there and the range of experiences that they have is absolutely huge, and it's really meaningful learning.
They just understand so much better what they're doing. They really do.
You don't just do something and move on, you revisit.
And it's because they've got context to apply their learning and explore their learning. And as you've said, as we've said several times, it's about making it meaningful and purposeful. But from what you're describing, I think that insight for that little child, for that little girl, is really a valuable insight to kind of see actually just how much knowledge she can demonstrate by exploring her own lines of inquiry, by going through her preferred modes of learning. And she can show all of that to you. But everything sounds like a really immersive learning experience for all of the children. So those connections will be phenomenal in terms of the children making connections in their learning. It'll be becoming really, really embedded. And I would imagine, not to say, obviously you're saying we don't, you know, it's not always about a writing outcome and those sorts of things, but children are writing, aren't they? And in terms of, you know, if you put your very kind of, if you like, firm hat on of, okay, so let's look at some more crude outcomes, for example, it's not having a negative impact on writing, for example, is it, by doing the provision that you're doing?
Absolutely
not at all, no.
We are increasing our percentage of children on track at the end of the year on year. Now, you know, we had a year group whereby they left year one and there weren't many children at all on track, you know, for the end of year one. But then actually, you know, that increased by 40-odd percent in year two, and you know, and obviously if we can continue to build on that, then absolutely, you know, we're going to get the outcomes that we need for the children. But hopefully they're going to really remember what they learned in school, because they have had time to revisit it time and time again. They've had really, really lovely, meaningful experiences. And you know, that's all you want for children. You know, you sort of look at them in year three and yes, they are grown up and yes, they are in key stage two, but that doesn't still mean that there's not a time for play, there's not a time for them to explore their own thoughts, you know. And I think that what we've managed to kind of show this year is that with that correct balance, and you know, we are still working on it. I'm not at all saying that we've got the balance right yet for kind of like adult-led learning, continuous enhanced provision. We're still, you know, we're still really working on it, but we're in our first year, and I think it's really important to note that actually, if something doesn't work straight away, it doesn't then mean that the whole thing collapses and that it hasn't worked. It just means that one element you haven't got quite right. And I think what I would say to anybody is just to continue to go, reflect, refine your practice, observe what the children are doing, observe what they know, observe the skills that they already have, and really build on that, because you're not going to get it right straight away. And we've really learned that. Some days we just think, oh my goodness, we thought that provocation area would be really successful. It might be that children haven't gone to it, or it might be that actually for whatever reason we haven't modelled that area effectively enough, so it's maybe not finished the day in quite the state that it was at the beginning of the day. But they're all things that we can take from. It's not a case of it hasn't worked, we're not going to do that again. It's like, right, actually, so what did work about that? What didn't work? What do we need to do next? And how can we make it more effective for those children to, you know, to come back to tomorrow?
We also work really closely with a literacy specialist, Sarah, who's worked with us for years now. And it's been really lovely, actually, because the staff really value working with her. You know, she's really skilled, but she has been able to comment on the improvement that she's seen, which, again, I think has given the staff a huge amount of encouragement and you know, motivation to continue, because, you know, we can see for ourselves it's working, but then we've almost also had that external QA of somebody else, you know, who doesn't work with them day in, day out, come in and say, yeah, do you know what? I can really see a difference in the outcomes that these children are now getting.
Yeah. And because actually then you're talking about we've got a clear intent in terms of what we're wanting our children to know, the skills we want them to have, how we want them to be. And actually, we absolutely understand why we're doing it in the way that we're doing it. And so what? It's absolutely having the right impact on our children and helping them to progress and move forward and making them stronger learners. What you were talking around about behaviour and motivation and resilience. And it's all of that kind of whole child, as well as the academic side of things. It's helping to feed and shape all of that as a big picture, isn't it? Which I think is really powerful. I was going to ask, it's okay, so again, something that we kind of get asked about quite a lot, so again, just interesting to hear your take, because you're in it doing it, around kind of, is there any kind of purposeful documentation or ways that you capture evidence or capture things to show children's progress through the curriculum and their journey? Is there anything that you're doing that you find particularly useful and purposeful because that's what it's about, or anything that actually is saying, nope, that doesn't work for us and we've tried it and we're not doing that? Because documentation, I think, becomes a worry for, again, as children move through the key stages, perhaps there's more of that expectation for documentation in a traditional way. So how does that look for your school and your children?
Yeah, and it's interesting you brought that up, actually, because I would say that was potentially one of our biggest challenges in terms of kind of like staff security, like in terms of, well, how are we going to assess our children if we haven't got these books full of, for example, science evidence or geography evidence? And again, when subject leaders come, because they've historically looked at, for example, those books, it's then very, very difficult to kind of then articulate what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it, and then the impact that it has. So we've done a lot of work whereby our subject leaders have kind of come to the environment with us, and we've spoken about, you know, where you can see the maths, for example, in all of the areas, where you can see the history, where actually we might not be teaching kind of like for this length of time for science, but actually children have got these repeated opportunities to kind of come back to their prior knowledge. So although we might not be kind of standing and delivering a lesson for that amount of time, actually the amount of time that children are learning new science skills and consolidating the skills that they've already got is actually far greater than maybe the expectation of the school, if that makes sense. We do a lot of learning walks with the subject leads. We've had staff meetings whereby one of our teachers, Tracy, in year three has kind of spoken about the environment, why it's so important, why we've put what we've put on the shelves, etc. And all of the staff have had that. So again, it's not about giving all the staff all of the training that they need to develop their own knowledge about continuous supervision, but it's an awareness of why we've chosen to do what we're doing at this point. Because again, you know, we're in two separate buildings. So Key Stage 1 are in one building and Key Stage 2 in another. And it's almost like it made the jump, if you like, into the next building. So again, of course, you get people saying, oh, well, are we doing continuous provision in year 3, 4, 5 now? What does that mean? What does that look like? How are we going to prepare for the SATs, etc.? So I think it was really interesting to have those discussions. So I think learning walks have been our most powerful tool, if you like, because actually, if you go and watch the children, you observe their learning, you talk to the children, the voice of the child is incredibly strong. You know, you will go and speak to them and what they're saying to us in regards to their learning behaviours, in regards to the, you know, to what they've learned as well, is it's absolutely a delight. Like, you don't want to leave.
No.
You know, they will talk and talk and talk behind legs off a donkey. You know, that once you're in there, you're never going to escape.
Have you talked about that?
I have.
So we, like Kirsty said, we, you know, the subject leaders did some QA. So one of our year five teachers, who's our history leader, was doing some QA around history. So came down to Key Stage 1, and he was just blown away by the children in year two, because they'd done the Great Fire of London, hadn't they? And just the dialogue that they were having with him around the Great Fire of London, the knowledge that they'd acquired around that, you know, they were showing him the timeline on the wall, how it fit into the history learning that they'd done. And he was astounded, literally astounded by what these children had learned, retained, could talk about really, really confidently. And we were Ofsted-ed last year. And one of the inspectors went into year one. So one of our deep dive subjects was geography. And one of the inspectors went into year one and was talking to children who were learning in the provision. And one young man had built the local park and really confidently was sitting there and describing to the Ofsted inspector, you know, the human characteristics, the physical characteristics, the difference, and all of that geographical vocabulary. You know, he was using really, really confidently and having, you know, a really good discussion with her about it. And we were never once questioned about our pedagogy. Not once, you know, because they see that, you know, the learning is sticking.
Yeah, I think you both make really good points about actually seeing the learning and actually visiting during provision time rather than the carpet input, if you like, is so, so powerful, because the children will showcase, won't they? They are your biggest kind of a showcase of what's happening at school. And it's very much showing and telling, those sorts of things. And interesting that what you said, Kirsty, around actually the knowledge and skills that they were showing within, I think it was science that you mentioned, actually was far, far greater than actually would have been noticed and observed had it have just been a group input or a gathering time. So visiting during learning time, I think, is really powerful, and great to hear that actually, you know, your inspectors did that and went in and engaged with the children in the provision time. And really powerful to hear, you know, just through play, all of that geographical things that you've just shared, Amy, is so insightful. So it's just lovely to listen to your passion and your knowledge. And I know it's been a huge amount of work. There will have been lots of research, lots of training, lots of reflection, lots of exploring, lots of discussions, lots of refining, evaluating, considering. And that is part of any school development journey, really, isn't it? Not just continuous provision. But if you were going to talk to a school then that were thinking about taking maybe just that initial step. So I know you're kind of really flying the flag, as it were, and taking it into year three, and joking aside, it may well be continuing. But actually, if you were to give a top tip to some top tips to people who were just thinking about taking key stage provision into key stage one, what sorts of things would you say to them?
Just be brave, be bold. And I think just do it. Until you try it, you never really see the power of it. So you can read the books, you can attend the training, but actually until you see children learning in really high quality continuous provision that's been enhanced effectively and has been driven by the child, as opposed to what a file says you should be teaching and when you should be teaching it, you will never ever know the true impact that it can have. Yes, resourcing is an issue, timetable is an issue, but they're all issues, they're all challenges and obstacles that you can absolutely overcome. And if you're willing to give it the time and the dedication, then you can absolutely make it work for your children, because it's not just right for our children. We believe it's right for, you know, for all young children to have these experiences. So just be brave, visit some schools that offer continuous provision if you're not willing to take the jump without, you know, spend some time with the children. And that, I would struggle to find anybody that would go away from the continuous provision that we've got here with our children not wanting to at least dip their toe in the water.
And I think listening to you both today actually instills lots of confidence that it has such a positive impact on the children, in terms of, you know, it's not affecting them academically in a negative way. Actually, it's strengthening all of that and them as a child. I think that's come through hugely. Now, Kirsty, you've kind of just kind of said, you know, dip your toe in the water and those sorts of things. But I think it would be fair to say that in your school for your children now, you would kind of not go back to a different way of teaching. This is the pedagogy that you're kind of applying. So actually, if you can just summarise, kind of to draw the podcast together, I would say one sentence, but I feel like it might be more than one sentence. Just summarise why you'd never go back to what you were doing previously. Tell us.
It's so, so difficult. I just think we've got to really, really consider not only what we teach children, but how we teach them. And actually, as soon as we start to put those two things together, actually, that's going to start to have a really profound impact on outcomes. You know, children learn best when, as you said earlier, they're given the autonomy. Teachers learn best when they're given the autonomy. You know, when as a senior leadership team, you put your faith in teachers and you say, do you know what? Actually, you know your children better than anybody. You know how they learn. You know what they need. Then actually, you just get such a lot out of them.
Yeah,
it's just incredible. And I would never, never, never go back, ever.
Wow, that's a strong sentence. Hey, Amy, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, just absolutely like everything Kirsty said, you know, you've got to be brave, make a plan for it. Don't try and do too much, you know, like we've said multiple times on, you know, throughout the conversation. It's been a real journey for us and we've been doing it for a really long time and we are absolutely still on that journey. You know, and we will continue to do it. But when you see the difference it makes to children, like, why would you go back, you know, to that, you know, different ways of teaching where you don't see those same levels of engagement, the impact on the children's well-being. You just can't almost take that away from them then. You know, you've got to carry on that journey because ultimately it's what's best for children.
And that's why we're all here. We're here for the children.
Absolutely. That's why we all came into teaching in the first place, isn't it? It's for the children and to help them to achieve their very best by us providing them with the very best learning opportunities that we can. So it's been so great to listen to your conversations and have insights into what's happening at your school. You can tell you're very motivated, very passionate, and I feel like this will be inspiring lots and lots of people. And I know actually you touched on kind of visiting settings and things. I know people do come and sometimes visit your setting and have a look. So I think that's great. And we're really looking forward to coming back to your school to do our Key Stage 1 roadshow. So I think that'll be a double whammy. And that's later in the year, isn't it? So I should look forward to seeing how it's going in year 3, because as you say, you're in your first year of that and almost hearing the what next. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. And really congratulations on what sounds like a really successful school development journey. Don't underestimate the amount of time, energy, thought and everything else that's gone into it. But it does sound like it's been really successful. So well done to you and the team. I'm really, really pleased to have heard all about it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. I shall see you soon. Take care.
Bye.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on, or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today, or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email, sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.